If the last reading was the way you have Psalm 121 memorized, this is the New Revised Standard Version. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where will my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. He who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time on and forevermore. Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. And now, without much more ado, the Reverend Dr. Jonathan Seitz.
Let us pray. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. It's really nice to be with you today. So as Pastor Wade said, my name is Jonathan Seitz, and my wife Emily and I are two of around 120 Presbyterian Church USA mission workers who serve all over the world. So we live in Taiwan, which is a yam or banana-shaped island between China, Japan, and the Philippines. We got a globe for my son. So this is China here, right? And then Japan's over here. And then Taiwan is the little island down here. It's about 23 million people. It's maybe this, it's about the size of New Jersey. So this is my first time sharing with FPC Marion, but I'm grateful to be able to connect this way across the miles and the time zones. Pastor Wade and I have often talked about maybe me visiting, because I sort of circle you all, that Emily's from Cincinnati and has family in Indianapolis, and I have family in Chicago and Birmingham, and our headquarters is in Louisville, and we sort of go back and forth throughout the Midwest and the South every time we're back in the U.S. We also have a church we visit in your presbytery. So I've known Wade now, I think, for almost 25 years. There were about a dozen of us that went to seminary out of the same college in the same year. We went all over the U.S., and then now we're scattered from West Coast to East Coast and around the world, and we've kept in touch. I was an intern at the same church as Lori, and when we were trying to figure out education here in Taiwan, she was one of the people I asked about resources for our kids, since they're kind of working between languages and different schools. And we're using this kind of online interim period as a chance to check in on churches and share about our ministry the last couple of years. And today I'll also talk a little bit, or actually quite a bit, about Taiwan and COVID, because it's we were the sort of the early wave to hit COVID, and Taiwan's had a very unique experience. But let's start with today's passage. Psalm 121 is one of the classic psalms of the church. For many of us, it's among our favorites, because it speaks to a God that is always with us, no matter where we go, no matter what we face. Wade used two versions of the psalm this morning, since it was one that was often memorized. I first started sort of living with the psalm back in March when it came up as a Sunday reading. But since then, I've been really grateful for it. I've shared the same version of this message at different churches. And our kids even memorized Psalm 121 at a church camp they did last month. So this is sort of a golden oldie of a psalm. And as I read about it, I learned that it was a traveler song or a prayer. Maybe people sang it as they walked or they rode animals through dangerous lands. It's one of the classics, one for the road. It's a good psalm for a time maybe when we feel a little bit worried or anxious. It's one that we can take with us everywhere we go. And I love the way that the psalm begins. It begins with this question: I lift up my eyes to the hills, from where will my help come? And the way the psalm starts sort of reminds me of the catechisms maybe some of you knew before. It's a question and answer format. Where will my help come from? My help comes from the Lord. Verse 2. My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. in my studies, I read some of the early catechisms and tracts written in Chinese. And one of the things that they would always affirm is that God is the creator of heaven and earth. The passage contrasts looking to the hills for help with looking to God who made heaven and earth. Who is our Lord? It's the one who made heaven and earth. Verse 3, God will not let your foot be moved. God, the God who keeps you, will not slumber. So both this verse and the verse next to it emphasize God's dependability or reliability. Will God let my foot be moved? No. Do I need to fear a God who's asleep at the wheel? No. And maybe it helps to remember the travelers walking, that one of the big fears if you hike or walk is a turned foot. It stops you in your progress. It maybe stops you for days or weeks. Verse 4, the God who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. God doesn't sleep. God doesn't rest. God is always aware. In Taiwan, several of the famous pastors in the life of the church are ones who fell asleep at the wheel after working a long time. So this is like a real danger in a lot of the world, maybe, is the sleepiness of travel. But in this passage, God promises us that God is with us. Verse 5, the Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. Verse 5 calls the Lord our keeper. It's kind of a strange expression. Sometimes in the Bible, people don't want this responsibility. In Genesis, Cain asked, am I my brother's keeper? Here in this passage, we read, the Lord is your keeper. A brother, a friend may let us down, but not God. Similarly, it says, God is the shade at your right hand. And I've thought about this passage as I preached it in Taiwan, that Taiwan is 100 degrees every day with very high humidity. One of the only major health crises we've had here was our daughter got slowly dehydrated when she was a baby from the heat. The heat is a real threat to travelers. But this passage promises, as it says in verse 6, the sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. You can imagine that this psalm, as it was read by early travelers, it sort of recounts all the fears you face in life. A turned ankle, something that happens in the night, the heat of the sun, the dangers of the evening. It goes on to say, the Lord will keep you from all evil. God will keep your life. This is a summary of the whole psalm. The Lord will keep us from all evil. God will keep our life. Knowing this allows us to rest in God, to trust in God. God will keep us. God will keep our life. And then finally, the passage concludes with verse 8. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time on and forevermore. The final verse brings us back to our travel, to our going out and coming back, not just now, but forevermore. It's a good verse to hold on to in the hustle and bustle of life and the running back and forth in times of transition or change and periods of fear. This is a wonderful psalm, and I've been grateful to kind of live with it this spring. And as I read this passage, I learned that this is sort of part of there's a whole tradition of traveling prayers and songs that people sang as they traveled from one place to another, as they set sail, moved along, went on pilgrimage, whatever the reason is. And I think Psalm 121 is also helpful for us in in-between times. I learned that in Judaism, there is a tradition called the Tefillat HaDerek, which is a traveling prayer for peace. That prayer starts off by saying, may it be your will, God, our God and the God of our ancestors, that you should lead us in peace and direct our steps in peace and guide us in peace and support us in peace and cause us to reach our destination in life, joy, and peace. And it goes on from there. But I sort of miss that. I like the idea of having a traveling prayer that we carry with us everywhere we go. Many of us know some version of the Irish blessing. May the road rise up to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. The rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. This is often used for the benediction or the charge at the end of church, right? And I also learned that in Taiwan, many people before I kind of grew up, even though both of my parents are retired pastors, I grew up in a family where we mostly prayed over evening meals and we prayed before we went to bed. Those were kind of the two times you prayed. But in Taiwan, you pray before each meal. And they also, people also often pray before long travels or journeys, that the youth group goes on a trip, or if the pastor goes with people, or elders go out to visit somebody. Part of that process is a prayer before you go. And I admire that. And it's a practice that I hope I can kind of adopt and continue to use also. So today I wanted to share about Taiwan's experience with COVID and how it's gone for us. And I have a link I shared where I talked to Presbyterian News Services. But we're both the early wave of COVID, and we're also a little bit of an outlier. So I hope our experience can just give you another point to think about, and that throughout the world we can pray for each other. So our family had gone on a regional retreat in January, and during the week we saw that there was a new coronavirus spreading. Taiwan has had a history of different viruses coming through, so it's a little more cautious. One of the workers for World Mission got us all masked before we got on the airplane. And when we came to Taiwan, the airports were already on high alert. They have heat cameras to check temperature. They looked in our baggage and they did surveys about travel, and we were supposed to give our contact info. And at this point, I hadn't yet learned the words contact tracing, but this is what the Taiwanese government was already working on. We later learned that the Taiwanese CDC had heard about the new flu in Wuhan, and they'd sent a team to do research at the end of December. In the months since then, Taiwan has become one of the models for dealing with COVID. It was an education for us because in many ways it showed us the best of the country that we live in. Taiwan is sometimes described as technocratic, meaning that it gives special weight to professionals and to formal expertise. Our president, Tsai Ing-wen, is an economist, and the vice president when this all started was an epidemiologist. We also realized along the way that Taiwan had other help, that in 2003, Taiwan was sort of the main site for SARS, which killed hundreds of people. And since then, Taiwan has ramped up for things like MERS and swine flu and other viruses. A second factor that helped Taiwan is that we're a smaller island with limited points of entry. You know, there's 23 million people and it's high density, but we only have a few international airports. Third, the citizens of Taiwan had prepared for this over time in different places, that they we had already had mask production locally. There's a tradition of checking temperatures and spraying hands for school and workplaces during flu season. And they had done the work for contact tracing for things like earthquake updates. And then fourth, there's a national healthcare system that simplifies the treatment so that the government can set out which hospitals people go to and what the interventions are. For all of us, this unfolded over several weeks. When we came back, it was the beginning of Taiwan's like New Year break, sometimes called Chinese New Year, which goes for 2 weeks. And then the government canceled school for two additional weeks and pushed back the start of colleges, including the seminary that I teach at. And the joke was that when school was canceled, you know, the grandparents started receiving phone calls that people continued working, but the kids want to stay with grandpa and grandma often. By the time our kids returned to school in early March, they'd been out of session for like 5 weeks. And at the time we felt frustrated by the break and the challenges of travel and grading and class prep while the kids were with us. But in retrospect, we can see that this was a window where Taiwan was able to ramp up its response. And then since then, we've gone through periods of like higher and lower alert. For instance, there was a time where a tourist boat had come through and people had come off with COVID and they visited some of the main attractions in downtown Taipei. So using cell phones, the Taiwanese CDC would notify people who'd been in those areas that they were supposed to go into quarantine. And then later on, it developed a system where everybody that comes back to Taiwan spends 2 weeks in quarantine hotels. And in the meantime, they've used testing and tracing to try to totally get rid of social transmission. So they've also done other things like mask rationing. They restricted gatherings by location and numbers. They designated hospitals for treatment. They set aside hotels and cabs for dealing with people going into quarantine. They eliminated tourist and travel visas and require Taiwanese and foreign residents to quarantine for 2 weeks. And then they do things like they're even like heat cameras at train stations. So I had known that Taiwan had this experience of SARS, but I didn't really understand what it was. Like that was 2003 and we didn't come till 2009. But another thing that was interesting to watch was how churches handled it, that the government told medium and large churches to go online and small churches were allowed to meet, but you had to wear masks and distance. And Sunday school, VBS, meals, things like that were all canceled. An interesting debate to watch was over communion. Many churches simply stopped it. The Episcopal churches decided to only use bread handed out by the pastor at the front of the church in a socially distanced line. And Presbyterians in Taiwan have now returned to communion, but the pastor usually wears a mask and gloves, and elders place cups and breads directly into individuals' hands. So offerings also shifted to one person holding a bag for collection or placing it in the back of the church. Another reaction we saw to this was our own denomination, is that for PCUSA, although things were happening in Asia, it didn't really become urgent until it began to get closer to the US. So on February 29th, we got our first notice. There was a ban on international travel on March 10th. And then on March 21st, we received the directive that PCUSA wanted all mission workers that could return to the U.S. to return to the U.S. But they also gave us the option to write a request to stay here. So as a family, we were nervous about traveling through airports and we didn't really have a logical place to stay in the U.S. My parents are in a retirement home and Emily's are in a small house. We also worried about being a burden on others or disrupting the kids' life. We also had hoped that Taiwan would be okay, that Taiwan seemed to have a plan for it. So it was interesting. I went back and looked at the emergency contingency forms I wrote. And I kind of said, you know, Taiwan's an island with a CDC. And I think that if there's a pandemic, the island would just close itself off. So because of the SARS epidemic, Taiwan's pretty well prepared for this. So it was interesting. Most of us in Asia ended up staying here. About 40 out of 40 returned to the US and 70 stayed abroad. PCUSA also asked us about our kids and how we were working with them. Our twins attend a 2,000 person school. It's actually right across the street from us that way. And it's a kind of fun, exciting place to be because it's like each grade is 14 classes of 30 kids. And when PCUSA heard that, they were kind of terrified. the school has kind of been through all of this and they have a protocol. So like our kids had to take their temperature every day and write it on a card and they had wore a mask for the school day. And it was interesting to see how they did that. My older son, Sam, is 12 years old and he goes to a primarily English language church school. They only have 250 students, but they were online for about a month or a month and a half in the spring. So he's just returned to school this week and the twins are set to start the last day of August. So it's been interesting to watch the kids' experiences at school. The kids all wear a mask all day. Even Eli learned a song. I wish I could, I'm not great at memorization. They learned a song about how to wash your hands. Like, you know, you wash them this way and this way, and scrub in here and you sing a song or something. The distancing's more closely monitored and kids aren't allowed to talk at meals. Eva got, the punishment if you get in trouble here is you have to like stand up. So Eva got in trouble at one point for talking during meals. We also learned in Taiwan they have protocols for schools that one case closes a classroom, two cases close a school, and then if there are two cases at 30% of the schools, it closes the districts, the whole district. So they didn't end up going online, but the twins were given Gmail and Google Classroom accounts. which was pretty stressful for us because like we can only help them somewhat in Chinese. Like they're in some ways they're learning vocabulary in third grade that's more advanced than some of the vocab we've learned. So our kids were aware of the anxiety around us and they missed regular activities like scouts or sports. We saw a mix of responses living in Taipei. I felt like people were a little more cautious around foreigners, but they also showed a lot of acts of kindness. They often asked us where we were from and how our family was doing. Emily had somebody help her order like a hand disinfectant, a hand spray. People at my school asked if we needed masks, and the tech support helped me prepare for some online teaching. We also did lots of Zoom sessions. We talked with other people with families of kids. At the first, we discussed our situations, and at the second one, an educator talked to the kids about their feelings. So Sam talked about wearing a mask and worrying about grandparents and friends in the U.S. I also went online briefly for my seminary classes, and students showed a lot of compassion and flexibility for us. Like I had a little teacher that helped me with some of the little teacher is kind of like a volunteer teaching assistant. And he helped me set up the online classes and show a video and do things like that. And then there have been a lot of other interventions. So you can read the article if you want to see more about those things like cleaning supplies and rooms and all of that. And in the Sunday school hour today, I talked about how some of this was kind of countercultural for me. We hadn't been through the earlier SARS experience. This was my first time wearing a mask. Like in Taiwan, people often wear masks if they have a cold, but I had never done that before. So it's been interesting to watch because in some ways, like our experience started a couple months earlier and then it's quieted down some, but it may flare back up. Like in Korea and Singapore, Hong Kong, they all had periods where the numbers went down and then came back. And now I can see, I know for my pastor friends in the US that it's the Zoom can be challenging after a while and that people are eager to be back together. But I think one way we can help each other is to kind of encourage each other and learn from each other's stories. So this month, I'm grateful that I can share with churches in different parts of the US. I recorded an online sermon for a church in Birmingham. And last week I talked to a mutual friend Wade and I have in Portland. So we've also been part of talks with other mission workers. And I know it's throughout the world, it's a challenging time. Like we had coworkers in Peru who were basically shut in their apartment for 3 months. They could leave, one person could go out once a week. You know, I know that in Africa and Latin America, cases are beginning to rise now. So it can be an exhausting time. And I can tell that churches are struggling with this kind of anxiety. But I've also been impressed by how the churches continue to meet and minister to folk. So right now, Taiwan has lifted many of its restrictions. And I feel like we're on the other side of this, but it could come back. I worry about my parents who are in a retirement home in Birmingham where there's been 7 deaths so far, I think. And we can see cases spiking in places we hold dear. 2 years ago, we lived in New Jersey, and that was one of the early places to get hit in the States also. So we've been just watching and praying for people we care about. We're grateful for efforts to communicate with each other, for systems to check in on those of us abroad, for informal conversations with others in Asia, and for our partner church, Presbyterian Church in Taiwan. And one of the things that moved me is the church in Korea has donated masks to churches in the US, and churches in Taiwan have donated masks to Presbyterian churches in England and Canada. So this is a strange time where there's reversals and maybe how we think things work, but it's also a chance to share and grow together. Psalm 121 says, "I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where will my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth." Today's passage repeats the words, "my help." In times of difficulty or challenge, we believe that God is a God who helps us, a God who cares for us. We may be tempted to look for help in other places, powerful people, shortcuts to success, easy ways to do things. We might even think that we can do all of this on our own, that we can get there by ourselves. But Psalm 121 tells us that it's not that way. God is our help and our strength. God is the creator of everything, the God of Tybe and the God of Marion. God does not sleep. God does not nap. God doesn't abandon us in the burning deserts of life. God shades us and comforts us. God is a strong umbrella protecting us from the rays of a Tybe summer. The Lord keeps us from evil, from the evil of others, and even from our own capacity for evil. God keeps our going out and our coming home. God is with us when we hit the road and when we get back home safe and sound. Whether by train or bus or cab or moped or foot, God keeps us. God is our vaccine, our daily vitamin, our alcohol spray, our antibiotic soap, our hygienic mask. God is our help wherever we go, wherever we are. God is my help, and God is your help too. Amen.